You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Ford,
Corey Doctorow, Brandon
Sanderson, Robin Mobb,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
Tiff Marcello.
Well, thanks for tuning in to Author Stories today. We've got a fantastic show for you. Go to HankGarner.com and subscribe to the show. Any way that you download podcasts, you can listen to it there. I'd like to talk about some sponsors before we get started. Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writer's community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experience. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques, learn from a vast collection of free writing resources, make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at Scribophile.com. For the Words is a unique writing motivator unlike anything I've ever seen. For the Words is an online writing platform which motivates writers of all backgrounds to increase their word count through gamification. Writing can be challenging, especially when you need to consistently produce a high output of words. By injecting a little fun into that routine and using daily rewards to promote a healthy writing habit, For the Words makes it easier to reach those word count goals. We're a community of bloggers, professional authors, college and high school students, research scientists, gamers, and first-time writers from all over the world. Come for the words, stay for the fun. It's forthewords.com. That's the number four, thewords.com. Business Essentials for Writers, How to Make Money in an Ever-Changing Industry by James Nettles. Business Essentials for Authors is your business 101 guide for the publishing industry. Whether you have never published at all or are looking to take your professional career up a notch in an easy-to-read and conversational way, the book covers the five pillars of business. Meet all of the people and jobs in the publishing industry and how they fit together. Building the foundation of your business career, including paths to publication. Understanding sales and marketing in publishing. Establishing all of the operational side of any business, from contracts and intellectual property, working with different tools and technologists, and how to design and build your website. Learning how money works as an author, basic accounting, and making more money. We look at all this and more from a long-term strategic view, how to get the plan done, and the mindset to make it all work together. It's Business Essentials for Writers by James Nettles. Kick. The Jenkins Cycle, Book 1 by John L. Monk. A supernatural thriller. They say suicides are damned for eternity, but if possessing the bodies of violent criminals is hell, then Dan Jenkins will take it, and he does, every time a portal arrives to whisk him from his ghostly exile. Normally, before the villain returns to kick him out, Dan dishes out a final serving of justice and leaves the world a safer place. It's one of the rules if he wants more rides, and he's happy to oblige. For a part-time dead guy, it's a pretty good gig. And then he meets her. Kick is the first book in a series of supernatural thrillers. If you like Quantum Leap and Every Day, you'll love this gritty and original take on the body-hopping hero story. Vividly written, Kick is a wild ride with a sharp, sarcastic wit and a flawed yet likable main character. Kick by John L. Monk. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Tiff Marcello on the show with me today. She has a fantastic, hilarious new book called The Key to Happily Ever After, and it's available everywhere now in paperback and audiobook and Kindle edition, however you read books. Tiff's new book is available. So welcome to the show, Tiff.
Thank you so much, Hank, for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you. We begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
I think I can definitely pinpoint it the summer before I turned 11. And I was armed with my library card, and I was two blocks away from the library in San Francisco, and I would just, you know, head over there and fill my arms up with books and bring it home. And I read The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton.
Oh yeah.
And then I just loved the book. It really moved me. And then when I looked in her bio, I read that she had written it at the age of 15.
Right.
And that was the moment I remember saying to myself, I'm going to write a book when I'm before I'm 15 years old. I'm going to have a book out before I'm 15. You know, it took another 25 years, but that was definitely the moment for me when I decided I wanted to become an author, or actually just be in a situation where somebody can pick my book up in a library.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that. That book has challenged and inspired so many people. It's one of those rare gems that it tells people that they can do it too. I think that's one of the special things about that book.
Absolutely. And I think that's what it is. And that's what books are. When I'm writing my books, I really think about who am I reaching and what am I trying to say? At the same time, I'm also reminding myself that if I can reach one person in whatever way, either to make them laugh or to make them go hug their sister or their sibling, that I've done my job, you know? So because that one book, I remember reading that one book and thinking, this is it. And I even wrote the publisher. I don't know if she ever got my fan mail, but, you know, they have the address that was my very first fan letter. So
that's amazing.
You
talked about wanting to reach people with your work and maybe to make them laugh or hug their sister. You know, we think about kind of these big important books that, and I'm air quotes important books that, you know, that make you know, big differences in people's lives, and we forget how important. Not air quotes, but how really important it is to make people laugh and to make people appreciate, who it is around them that matters. Those things are just as important, if not more so, because those are the things that make you open your eyes to those around us, not just kind of big concept ideas.
I agree. When I was my road to publication, so I was searching for an agent for about 5 years before I met my agent. And I really struggled with, I write fairly quiet books, you know, and I write about everyday life. Like my concepts aren't completely high concept. And towards the time when I was like, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? You know, like, am I wasting my time? I just kept telling myself, you know, these everyday stories do matter, you know, and it's sometimes these everyday stories that most people pick up and they kind of blow through them in a day. You don't realize that the messages actually stick with you, you know, later on down the road. So,
well, it's in my writing, I've had some things that are very high concept, I think. And the thing that has touched the most people is a book that I wrote that has just the goofiest premise. But it allowed it to really get into people's hearts. And that's where, I think that's where the magic happens. Yeah. I think we get so sidetracked by these ideas of high concept and all of that. And, the everyday is what's important.
Right. And I think that everyday conflict is real, you know, what I do think is so critical is that characters are relatable. So I think in all stories, quiet stories and high concept stories, that if the characters are relatable in some way and you can grasp on to something about them or you want to root for them, or maybe root against them, but really in a, you know, in a visceral way, you want to keep reading. So I think that's where, like, I just really hope, you know, like when I'm writing that these characters will reach somebody or will say something that will kind of niggle at you and say, oh, that's right. You know? So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You wanted to write that book at 15. You wanted to yeah. have someone pick up your book at the library. As happens to 99% of the writers out there, me included, there are things that happen. Life comes up and our, you know, best laid plans of mice and men and all that good stuff. What were you doing in the meantime before writing grabbed you back?
Right. So I think it was that same summer when I told my dad that I wanted to become a writer, right? And he was like, no, ma'am. He was like, so how are you going to eat? You know, that can. So it was a real, like, I was like,
and you're like, shh, up in dad.
The air, and yes, it was yeah. like, oh, it just brought me right back down to earth. But it was probably one of the best advice that I got, because he never said, don't be a writer. He just said, you need to be able to survive. And my parents were immigrants, so they have a very practical worldview, and they still do today. And they are my biggest cheerleaders too. So what I did is, well, my mom kind of planted the seed, like, maybe you can become a nurse. I'm like, okay, I'll be a nurse, because I'm such a pleaser, I guess, with my family, you know? So indeed, I became a nurse. So I got my bachelor's in nursing. I was an army nurse for about 4 years and a civilian nurse after that, part-time. And I raised a family. And then I got to the point in as a nurse where I was really looking at, okay, do I keep moving on and become a post-grad nurse, or what am I really wanting to do? And I was writing along the way, blog posts. I was a blogger for about 10 years. And it was actually my mom who said, you know, these blog posts are beautiful. You should really write a book. And I was like,
full
no.
circle, mom.
Yeah. And I remember telling her, mom, no, that's crazy. You know, and I just had my third baby, and she's like, no, go ahead. Just go do it. And sure enough, I started writing longer pieces and for myself. And when my fourth kiddo was born, I started querying, or a little bit after I started querying. And here we are. But it really does come full circle, you know. It's at the same time, like, I have really no regrets, because yes, I survived, right? I fed myself, you know, I helped feed this family. So what needed to happen, happened. And actually now I can write with a little bit more freedom, because we were able to make something of our family up to this point, you know, so.
It's something I'm very conflicted about, is the yeah. idea that you need to get some life experience so
right.
that your stories really, so that you can connect with people on a deep level, because you've been through some stuff. And,
yeah.
and I really believe that. I really believe that for me to really convey something to someone else, I need to have been through something. And then people come along like S.E. Hinton and completely
yeah.
blow that out of the water
yes.
and write deep stuff that is right. are way beyond her years.
Yeah.
And Christopher Paolini did that when he wrote his fantasy series, Aragon,
right.
way beyond his years. And he had no business writing a book like that at his
right.
age, you know.
Right.
But he did, and it connected with millions and millions of
right.
people. And, you know, so Do you feel like, are you appreciative that you had the time to really let the stories build in you and to get maybe a different perspective on the world? Do you feel like you could have written at 15 the way that you can now?
I definitely think that while my imagination is just as strong, like, I am way more resilient now as a person. So speaking personally, if I had tried and failed to get an agent at age 15, maybe even 20, I would have quit altogether, just because my mindset was not there. I could do things like, you know, help a baby come into the world without an issue. But when it's something so personal as writing and authoring, I don't know if I would have been as resilient at 25 as I was at almost 40 with, you know, rejections that papered the floor, you know, like my over 200 agent rejections. So I think it really is going to be personal. But I also think that some people just know how to write characters. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if we talk again back with The Outsiders, like it wasn't a perfect script, you know, but you were just rooting for these people. And sometimes folks can just write that. They can just write that, that inner conflict. They can express it. And that definitely for me, I mean, I did need time to hone that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's that one thing we overlook. There's one thing to have innate creativity and a way to think about characters and to present those to other people. But the what you talked about first, just having the confidence to continue on when you wouldn't have then, that's a part of it that's just as important. As if you give up, it's never going to happen.
Right. And I think too, it goes beyond just getting an agent, of course, as you know, sure. and getting published. It's also feedback from your readers. It's also reviews and future rejections from publishers and our editors. So I don't know if I would have stuck that long, you know, if I was 25 years old and I was ready to take on the world and I was continuously getting rejected, or if somebody told me that my book sucked, you know. Now I feel that I have a better perspective, as well as I'm so busy around my own family. I know that you have a big family, right?
Yes.
So just when you think that, like, oh my gosh, this career is going to get me down, it's like your family just kind of pulls you out of it real fast. Like, because your outside life is so busy, where it gives you the perspective that, okay, we are a multifaceted character ourselves, and we are surrounded by the outside world and not just this book or this review or this yes or no, you know?
Well, and if I would have written a book 20 years ago when our kids were very small, and some of our kids weren't here yet, I would have a very different perspective on parenting and relationships and the world in general, because I had, you know, was living on 2 hours sleep a night and, you know,
right.
stuff like that.
Right.
Going through the different phases of life really gives you different perspective. And that's something that only comes with time.
Right. And now, would it have been awesome if I had been published at 15? That would have been freaking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's just a dream. And I do give it up for when I see these young authors, I'm just like, wow, they are just so, so talented.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And my youngest daughter, she really loves to read. And I feel like she might be a writer. And I am just looking at her with like stars in my eyes going, maybe she'll get published as a young woman. You know, it's because you are just so happy for them, because, you know, finding your dream early is also an amazing thing, you know. Yeah. And realizing the dream early is a wonderful thing. Yeah.
Oh, I'm that parent that leaves notebooks and pens around the house, you know, just waiting for, you know, the spark to hit somebody. And
yes.
I could be a little obnoxious about it. Yeah.
That's too funny.
Oh, so Tiff, what kind of things were you blogging about during this 10-year period?
It was mommying, basically. It was the start of blogging, you know, when it was still Zanga. Then Blogger.
Yeah.
And then my current blog is still on WordPress, and I probably only blog once every 2 or 3 months now. But at one point, It was like two or three times a week. And that was when the blogging community was really small and we really knew each other. And you would leave comments, you know, like, so I would write about being a mom and being a military spouse and crafting. So every time I finished a knitting project, I would post it. You know, it was one of those, it was really how I shared my life when I was so in with these children, when it was truly an outlet. And it was great practice blogging, 500 words two or three times a week and having to edit and re-edit my work before I posted it. I do believe that doing that really gave me the stamina to be able to write a book.
So what was that first book that the idea came and came to fruition?
So my very first book is about this young, this is of course it's in my drawer in our mission cabinet, just hidden away, but it was a YA book about a young woman who falls in love with a guy who it was not who he says he was. So she travels across the country on an Amtrak and finds out that this guy is actually married. So it was upper YA, and it was a good starter book to cut my teeth on and realize that I needed a lot of work, and I put that away and I kept starting and restarting. So the first two books I queried were actually YA, because I thought that that's the space I wanted to write in. And I thought about it again and I'm like, let me see if I can, I'm touching on topics because by then my then older child was a little older, and I was like, I don't know how to write this now, because he was getting older and I had a different perspective on young teens. It makes you think a little bit differently. So I said, let me write this next book as an adult book. And so my first adult book was actually the first book that was published. So it's a romance about a food truck owner who parks in front of a restaurant who she didn't realize was her old boyfriend, her old boyfriend's parents. And there's this kind of like food truck versus restaurant conflict. So and that ended up getting me the agent, and that was published by Pocket Star of Simon & Schuster. So yeah, it's been, yeah.
What are some of the challenges in going from YA to the more adult or literary type fiction? Is there a big mindset shift?
I think so. I really had to lessen the angst in my adult books. I had to remember, sometimes I even say it out loud, they need to speak to one another, because I think that I was writing my young adult, not all young adult books are like this, but I was writing my young adult books in a way where there was so much angst between the characters. And as an adult, you just need to say it, we just, as we are talking now, you ask a question and the other one should answer. But in terms of approach, I still felt like I was coming upon it with a young at heart attitude, because I'm around, my friends are all pretty young at heart. And even in our 40s now, we're all still pretty silly. So in my books, I try to make it so that the adults aren't taking themselves too seriously at the same time,
Right. There's a tendency in some YA fiction to have a lot of navel gazing, just a lot of introspection.
Right.
And writing those adult, I like how you said that sometimes you just need to say it and not go into all the inner turmoil.
Right. Well, I mean, teenagers have a lot of inner turmoil.
Right.
I don't know the range of your kids, but I have an 18, 16, 13, and 9. And I feel like the jump between 13 and 18 is like huge,
Yes.
So when I talk to my 13-year-old, or when I kind of sometimes hear her on the phone or on Skype with her friends or FaceTime with her friends, I'm like, oh my gosh, it is. It's like this internal talk that's coming out, but just to their friends or even out loud to themselves. It is a doozy, you know, and I realize now that maybe my voice, you know, now that I have my own teenagers, and that's probably why I also moved towards the adult side of the house, is I don't know if I could do them justice. It's very hard to write teenagers, you know? It's hard to show how they are both immature and wise at the same time. You know, they know so much, but probably don't express themselves the best way possible. You know, even at 15, like, or at 16, my son will say the funniest things and like really poignant, you know, and then the next sentence will be something totally immature. And I'm like, what? I don't get you. It's okay. You know?
Yeah. Our youngest is 15, and okay. You could cut the hormones with a knife in the air. It's just, you know. Yeah, and brilliant things and completely stupid things in the same breath. But
right.
But you just love them, you know.
Yeah, and then they remember everything. And I think that's what it is. It's like and what I love about YA fiction now is that like it really shows that, where these teenagers, they remember everything you do. And
yeah.
and not only do they say it, but they go through it in their heads. You know what I mean? Over right. and over. So anyway.
Internalize everything.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, the new book, The Key to Happily Ever After, is a different story altogether, but we're still dealing with family and relationship in this book. And we've got three sisters, the De La Rosa sisters. Tell us how they came to you, and what is the story about?
Okay, so the De La Rosa sisters, you've got three sisters who are completely different. And what happens is that they inherit the family's wedding shop as equal owners. So that in itself is such an issue because, you know, you've got Mari, who is the eldest, and she's a little bossy. And then you've got Jane, who's the middle child, and she's a pretty neutral, logical kind of woman. And you've got Pearl, who kind of flies by the seat of her pants, but she's really creative, and I think she's brilliant too. And they have to work together in order to continue this family legacy. And the reason why I chose a wedding story was I am like a little bit obsessed with weddings. I had two weddings. I had two weddings because my husband and I were both in ROTC, then boyfriend / fiance. And he was ahead of me and he needed to get stationed. I needed to get stationed with him. I was like, no, we are not going to be separated, because that it was a potential where you'd be married, but be stationed different places. So we were already engaged and we had planned to marry a year later, the end of my senior year of college. And we sped it up. I told my mom, we're getting married in a month. And she's like, what? So we had this quick wedding. It was still fantastic. Like, we bombarded my godmother's house and it was still gorgeous. And then we had a second wedding, because that wasn't the church wedding. And we had a second wedding in Germany as two active duty soldiers. And, you know, the priest was in his army uniform. I mean, he was in his BDUs, which is the camouflage uniform, and everybody kind of came over on their lunchtime. And then like, we kind of said, okay, we're married. It was like 5 minutes. So ever since then, I've always been obsessed with weddings. I love, you know, looking through Martha Stewart wedding magazines, even after I was married. And what really got me was all of these, you know, when Pinterest came about and these weddings suddenly just grew, you know, in intricacy, you know, and then you've got the pressure. So I really wanted to set a book in that situation. So you've got three sisters who have the pressure of growing this business And then you have just the external pressure of just these weddings in general. So it's a bedrock of shenanigans, I think, you know.
And I have three daughters. And,
yes. Oh my gosh.
and I think I have these three daughters. They're so close. They are so close and so different. And the imagining that the three of them would share anything equally, I totally believe that they could commit to owning a family business equally, but that they would all think their equal share was bigger.
Right.
You know?
Right. And that is the thing. Like, what is equal share for 100%, three sides? I mean, there is no, it's like 33 and a third, 33. You know, like, what is that? So, I think that the thing is with these sisters that they're so different and they're so close. So they know each other's faults and they even know their own faults. And they go to each other in different capacities. So you've got the youngest and the oldest getting together for a different reason than the youngest in the middle getting together, you know, because that's everybody's relationship with every sibling is different. And I really wanted to touch on sisters as well, because it's really a homage to all of my sister friends as military spouses, because we basically like live together when the spouses are deployed. You know, I always tell the story, but we moved up to upstate New York, and my husband deployed like shortly thereafter, and he kind of dropped me off with my two young boys at the time in this 4-apartment building. And it's cold in upstate New York. And I was like, what is this? You left me here. You know, I was just, it was so sad. And then, but those three women became my best friends, you know, and to this day, even though we don't really speak anymore, you know, Amy, Kim and Julie, if you're hearing this, but if, even though we don't really like talk on the phone or text, I know that if I ever need them, like they would move mountains to come and see me. So it was really about them, about being with people who are so different and accept them no matter what. Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. So the when people read this book, what do you hope they take away from it? What do you hope someone's feeling at the end of this book?
I hope that they're feeling inspired to continue the relationships with their friends. I think that's what it is for me. And potentially if they haven't spoken to somebody in a long time, that they do, that they pick up the phone or they send them an email. And I'd really like to say that I write books so that people can be together. You know what I mean? I really do believe in a happily ever after, and even not in the romantic way, you know, in a familial way, in a friendship way. I believe that you can always reach out to somebody, and that despite differences, I believe that there is commonality in people and that they should reach out. So if this book will have somebody pick up the phone and call their friend or their sister or whatnot, that would be wonderful.
And it's so important to make people laugh and to feel the joy of relationships and not just all of the chaos.
Right. Yeah. This book has some, you know, some serious parts, some things that happened in the past where they have to work through. And I think what it is that the past might have, you know, made them struggle in the beginning, right. But in the end, they kind of pull together. So that is the hope, you know,
excellent.
For everyone. Yep.
And then this book is going to be followed up with a sequel, a sweet sequel, right?
Yeah. No, it's not a sequel.
Okay.
It's another standalone. It's called Once Upon a Sunset. And we don't have a date for that yet. And it's a mother-daughter story, and it's about found family. Okay. And little bits of World War II in it. So I'm really excited about this upcoming book. And So,
well, excited. Well, when it comes out, you'll have to come back and let's talk about
it. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, the Key to Happily Ever After is out everywhere now. We highly recommend this book. Tiff, if people are just learning about you and want to dig into all the stuff that you do, is there a place they can find you online?
Absolutely. So I am at Tiff Marcello in every social media, or almost every social media platform. So you've got Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and my website is tiffmarcello.com.
Excellent. We're going to send everybody to see you, Tiff, and we wish you much success on The Key to Happily Ever After. Thanks so much for taking time to come on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Author Stories Podcast. For more great author interviews like this one, go to hankgarner.com and dig through the archives. There's something there I know you'll love. Now stay tuned for a special audio clip from Richard Gleaves' The Jason Crane Series.
No use crying over spilled milk. Eliza hated that cliche. She'd grown up a cliche. Her life, a bowl of cherries, duck soup, easy as pie, child's play behind a white picket fence. Mother had been the Wyatt Earp of cliches, firing them off, quick draw. A rotten apple spoils the barrel. Smile and the world smiles with you. Every dog has his day. Children should be seen and not heard. She believed them all, particularly this last. Eliza obliged, preferring to wander the streets of Wytheville, Virginia, on her own lonesome terms. The divorce left Laura a spinster librarian, and one false step on icy stairs left her an invalid as well. The accident happened on New Year's Eve, 1950. Laura had just locked the doors of Wytheville Public Library. "We must make black-eyed peas tomorrow," Laura had been thinking, "with turnip greens." That ensured a lucky new year, and if you swept some money over your threshold, a prosperous one, too. She loved those old southern traditions. She looked both ways, checking for Negroes, but turned a heel on the icy marble of the stairs and fell into the bushes below, breaking the long bones in both legs. Eliza had taken advantage of her mother's absence. She'd lost her virginity that same night. She'd swept Ron Partridge over her threshold, initiating her own beloved tradition. She was nursing a hangover, giddily reliving the event. But around 8:30, she realized that her mother had not come down to breakfast. She checked her mother's bedroom, found it empty, took the bus down to the library, climbed the high stairs, knocked hard on the library doors, and heard a groan below. Laura lay under the William Penn Barberry bushes, below the yellow-trimmed windows of the nonfiction section. Her white stockings ran Jezebel red with blood. Sweat and melted snow had soaked her blouse, and her gray forehead blazed. The broken bones didn't kill Laura Merrick. She lay in the hospital, wheezing, her legs mortared up in casts. She had few visitors after the first week. Her church group was glad to fret over a poor thing for a day or two, but they trickled away when Laura had the bad manners to linger. On Valentine's Day, as her mother slept, Eliza drew big, sloppy hearts on her casts. Laura harumphed when she woke and insisted on keeping her legs hidden beneath blankets afterwards. But in late March, something miraculous happened. Laura's self-control dropped. She ranted at nurses, spit at doctors, swore like a Navy pilot dropping F-bombs on Hiroshima. She had dementia, the doctors said. Eliza decided that her mother had just stopped believing her own bullshit. The spells continued over the next 2 weeks, and Eliza enjoyed her mother's company for the first time. They swapped bawdy jokes, ogled the handsome interns, and chattered like best girlfriends late into the evening. They had long conversations, and Laura spoke her own mind in her own words about things that mattered to her. It broke Eliza's heart when the prim, condescending librarian returned. Laura hardly acknowledged anything that had passed between them. The clichés returned. "You can't have your cake and eat it too. A leopard doesn't change its spots. Nothing is certain except death and taxes." This last proved true. On April 15th, Laura Merrick marked her Bible with a tongue depressor, set it on her nightstand, leaned back against the headboard, and coughed blood down the front of her nightdress. Eliza found her that way, dead as the proverbial doornail, and yes, the blood was thicker than water, just as her mother had always said. much thicker than water, in fact, perhaps as thick as molasses in January.